Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Welcome to 2016. In our first episode of the new year, I'm excited to have groundbreaking author Elena Vreeland, who wrote the cutting-edge and spine-chilling book Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full-Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. Elena's innovative research has tied together a vision of the global power grid, weather warfare, and the rise of covert geoengineering. Her work is some of the most rigorous and well-researched material ever produced on these controversial topics. Now, Elena's broad understanding of deep political forces that interface through corporate and government institutions has helped her connect the dots from advanced nanotechnology, HARP, and the links between GMOs and chemtrails. Get ready for some fascinating and disturbing information. We're starting the new year off with a bang. Here we go. Elena Vreeland. Chemtrails. HARP. The Space Fence and Weather Wars.
I guess I have to say I see us completely in it now. We are literally being plugged in to this ionized atmosphere in this now wireless world. All of this in concert, all of this AI, this is all AI. We have not just taken in the heavy metals, the polymers, and the biologicals, but we have also taken in nanosensors that can be remotely contacted and read. We're really in a vortex now.
You know, sometimes covert projects need to work out in the open to achieve their objectives. In order to keep this hidden from the public, they often employ intelligence methods like creating buzzwords in popular culture. Terms like conspiracy theory or truther are often employed by the mainstream media as a way to discourage dialogue on crucial issues, as censorship takes the form of word cops disparaging those individuals and groups who challenge the official reality. Today we'll pierce the wall of secrecy on the vital issues of chemtrails, HARP technology, and the global smart grid that's being built right before our eyes. Luckily, we have informed individuals like today's guest, Elena Vreeland, to help guide us through the minefield of rumors versus facts when it comes to the important question of mechanized tyranny versus creative freedom in the 21st century. So let's get started. Elena, it's great to have you here on the show. Now, we're going to dive deeply into this global infrastructure for control that's being developed at high speed to suit corporate and military agendas. So let's start off with HARP, what it is, what are some of the objectives behind it, and where did it come from?
HARP is the unit up in Gakona, Alaska. It's a phased array antenna farm. And it stands for, the acronym is very easy to use, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. Mm-hmm. And when it started in the 90s, it actually had been born in 1987 with Bernard Eastland's patents on HARP. And I spend chapter two in my book, Chemtrails, HARP, and the Full-Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, deconstructing Eastland's patent to show the correlation between the so-called chemtrails. Some people like to call them persistent contrails. I think that's misleading. Or we could call them aerosols, the aerosol program that came in the wake of Project Cloverleaf and really hit its stride when HARP was finally developed. And what Eastland was able to see was that all the programs that we have had, including and Eastland's patent in 87, came out just as the SDI program, the Strategic Defense Initiative, that I think you mentioned when you interviewed Catherine Austin Fitz. I was happy to hear you mention that.
Yes.
The SDI program, the Star Wars program, was really put to bed along with topic I'm writing about now in a second book on this subject, The Space Fence.
Yes, and this is a fascinating topic I want us to get into. My question on SDI, the Star Wars program, and the Space Fence is, why were they shelved at that point?
These were put to bed because there simply was not enough energy in the lower atmosphere that could be utilized by such a high-frequency energy technology as they had in mind.
I see.
So Eastland's patent came out in 87. Work began on drawing energy down from the upper atmosphere, the ionosphere, into the troposphere and the stratosphere. So that's what it was all about initially. They were up there digging around in the ionosphere. And that was not new either. Back in the 50s, we were detonating nuclear bombs up in the Van Allen belts, and for a variety of experiments, as usual, trying to see, I'm sure they had in mind, gee, how can we get that energy down below, lower, so we can use it? And also because they were trying to find a way through the radiation belts in order to really get to the moon and go to Mars and go all these places they had in mind once they had the technology in place. So they had already been rummaging around up in the ionosphere and the magnetosphere. And this is really key to understand how HAARP was with such an amazing amount of power that could be logarithmically multiplied tenfold, 20-fold, in order to see what happens. I mean, that's basically the scientific philosophy. It's no more complex than a 12-year-old boy might have who's experimenting in the garage.
Right.
And so when the HAARP got going and was able to focus and send tremendous energy up into the ionosphere, into a certain portion of it, and then pop off all of those electrons from the atoms and stimulate ions that were already there. And those ions began to come down. I think we call them Birkeland currents or Alvin currents, bring them down along the magnetic lines of force down into the lower atmosphere. They thought they'd died and gone to heaven because the only drawback was that they needed to keep quickening that. They needed to keep stimulating it because eventually it would, you know, just come down and you know, how do you keep it going? And that's where the chemtrails came in, loading them with heavy metal particulates so that they could zap them with radio frequency, laser, high-powered microwaves in order to stimulate them in the lower atmosphere, keep the atmosphere ionized. And what that means is keep it battery ready, keep it antenna-like, and that's what we have now.
Now, this program of spraying these chemtrails, is this something we should imagine is a U.S. venture only, or are there other countries involved?
When I first did the book, initially, I thought that it was only NATO countries doing this. But, of course, China and Russia have their own programs going. And certainly, you know, we, during the Cold War, helped the Russians a lot in this area when they had the their own experiments going, like the woodpecker.
Uh-huh.
So to get back to Eastland's patents, when HAARP was finally built, and you remember Nick Begich and Gene Manning wrote Angels Don't Play This HAARP, a tremendously powerful book.
And this is in the mid-90s somewhere.
It was 1995. And I read the book the following year when I got back to the Northwest from grad school at St. John's College in Santa Fe. And while reading the book, I had a substitute teaching job and took the book with me to the north end of where I live, which is not far from a joint military base near me. And I was reading the book at lunchtime in the faculty lunchroom, and a couple of guys sat down and asked me what I was reading, and I said, you know, I didn't know much about it, but here's what I'm reading. And they took a look at it, and we had a conversation. And at the table also was a little mousy woman who never looked up from her sandwich, as I recall. And I don't know if that's what it was, but the next day I was out doing some yard work, and I had a full-on military helicopter come over my house and hover over my roof for 5 minutes.
Huh.
And that's when I think I got on their XY coordinates and maybe went on some sort of list at that point. Those were the 90s were very paranoid, as I recall. A lot was going on. A lot was being suppressed. As final tweaking was happening. And I now realize that Nick's book really made a tremendous impact. It was very well done for, again, there he is living near Gakona, Alaska, where the HAARP installation is. But he's also operating out of military papers. He's finding on the net. He's doing FOIAs. You know, he's like me. He's sort of a jockey in the race, but you know, I'm not familiar with the entire terrain, and I'm just feeling my way along.
Mm-hmm.
So when HAARP got going, the chemtrails got going big time, and they were mainly experimenting down in the in the high desert initially, right over independent scientist Clifford Carnicom. Now, when I was living in Santa Fe this last time, I became very good friends with Clifford and his wife, and we would go out to breakfast every couple of weeks, and Clifford and I would end up talking about this, and his wife and others would be talking about other things. And so destiny put Clifford in my path for just about when Adam Parfrey at Farrell House Press, I had done some work for Adam. I'd done some editing for him when I was living in England. Adam asked me if I thought I could write a book on chemtrails. And I said I thought I could because I had a file on it and I had a file on HAARP. So Clifford was very helpful to me when I began writing the book and for deconstructing Eastland's patent to understand how all of this really fit together with the fibers Clifford was collecting in the mid to late 90s. And then he was analyzing under a spectroscope, showing the relationship between the fibers being delivered by the chemtrails and the Morgellons disease, as we call it now. All of this began to slowly make sense, especially the relationship between not just HAARP, but other ionospheric heaters. We had half a dozen very large ones all the way from Norway down to Puerto Rico. But we also, we now have many more installations that can be used. And all of these ionospheric heaters, the radomes like SBXs off the coast of every country, but there are about a dozen is what I hear, and the NexRads across the country, the Gwen towers, the cell towers, all of these are dependent upon the chemtrails because the chemtrails keep loading the atmosphere with conductive metals that the ions definitely need in order to remain active.
Mm.
So that's kind of our condition right now.
So they're definitely in widespread use now. And of course, they've made the subject so mysterious by denying it at an official level and in the mainstream media. And on top of that, the alternative media is rife with misinformation about chemtrails. But nonetheless, we have so much solid research from yourself and others that they do exist. And of course, on certain days, you can just look up and see them covering the sky. So it really is one of these things that's in our face, whether or not the official reality wants to acknowledge it. So let's take a moment here and define what are some of the real hazards of chemtrails based on your findings.
Oh, multiple. Not to mention breathing an ionized atmosphere.
Right.
I mean, to my knowledge, human beings have never done that, nor have animals, nor have trees. And they are dying. They are dying all around us now. So there's three basic, well, at least three basic things in the, loaded in the chemtrails. There are the conductive heavy metals. That's aluminum, barium, and strontium are the primaries, but there's also lithium. Sulfur's in there. There's all sorts of chemical mixes because this is experimental. Even though now it's proven itself for about 20 years. It's amazing. It's almost 20. 1995 to now is 20 years. So I can't get it through my head that that's gone so fast. So you have the chemicals, the chemical metal mixes, and then you have polymers like mylar. And these polymers are useful. I mean, people are talking about seeing filaments, spider webs falling from the sky. These polymers are useful as piggyback agents. Fungi are coming down on them, even fungi spores from in the upper atmosphere. I mean, we don't know what's coming down from the upper atmosphere. You know, I don't know if DARPA knows or, you know, the military scientists, astrophysicists, etc., if they're making collections. I certainly hope they are. And naming these things. So that would be the second one, the polymers. And then third is being piggybacked on the polymers are the biologicals. And that's all the way from desiccated blood cells, from whatever, to the Morgellons, the what Clifford Carnicum has now, after careful, painstaking analysis, been able to go through four or five sheaths in order to get down to the actually engineered, genetically engineered microbe. He calls it the cross-domain bacteria.
Right.
These, and I'm sure that's not the only one being piggybacked. I'm sure it's not. But all of these are coming down in nanoparticulates. And this is going to be the nano age. Many things are now nano-sized, and that means 1 micron to less and less thick. These cannot be seen with the naked eye. They can barely be seen by a high-powered microscope. So we need to understand that the irresponsibility of this is that it's being done globally. This is being dropped. And air currents are picking it up, and the jet stream is picking it up and carrying it. And then when we have precipitation, it's being loaded and brought down even more so. And we're breathing this. We're eating the food that is grown in the soil that is full of this. This is tremendously dangerous.
Yeah.
And couple that, Daniel, with this suddenly wireless world, we're penetrated and interpenetrated by waves, extra long waves, short waves, all kinds of waves, as they push this wireless agenda further and further and further, not for our convenience, not even for their convenience, but for, I believe, genetic and transhumanist future. That's how I see it, is the interaction, the synergy between what we're breathing and what is now living in our blood cells and activated constantly by wireless technology and living near cell phones and beneath power lines and 60 hertz in our houses and smart appliances and smart meters on the outside.
Well, it's true. We're just inundated with these waves and high-tech frequencies. Now, some of the more high-octane speculation around this is that it's part of a depopulation-style agenda. But where do you come down on that?
So I don't think that. I think they're experimenting for a transhumanist future, a singularity future of so-called enhanced human beings, which will have to eventuate in the loss of to what I call human. I don't call somebody with two eyes and two ears and a mouth and a couple of arms and legs a human.
Right.
There is a certain human quality that is very high. Now, we're being taught through our media that it's really humanity's nothing. And certainly on the battlefield, there's soldiers have been so vulnerable. And so I can understand the military interest in this to get some real special forces guys who are hardly human anymore.
Yeah, basically so, they're more like cyborgs.
So much more like cyborgs. And so I see all of this as part and parcel of that future in mind for us. And that's why I work so hard. I want children born now and children to be born in, you know, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, to have the option to be a human being and not to be wired in to an environment that has been turned into a battle space. This is the problem. And even if you go into the military documents that I go into in the book and more on the net, everything's in open source because they're counting on the fact that nobody reads anymore and nobody, hardly anyone can think anymore. So it's all there.
Yeah.
There are plans for the future, you know, not just owning the weather by 2025, but real, real merging with biotechnology, as they call it, and you follow the money, as Catherine Austin Fitz would be great at, and I wouldn't be so as good at, you follow the money, and you're going to find that most of the deep pockets in the world now are investing in biotech.
Wow.
They know what's coming, and they've all bought into this technology that's falling from the sky on a global level, and they're backing it. I mean, not just Bill Gates. All of them are backing it because they know what is the future holds. They are the future makers. And so I find this to be reprehensible that people are experimented on without their consent. Placentas are loaded with heavy metals as babies are coming out. This to me is in the category of sheer evil. Once you usurp a common person's free will, and you set up government structures, financial structures that, as I love that term that Catherine uses, harvest. You're constantly harvesting these people like, you know, some giant machine munching up lives. Then you're in the realm of evil. Because leaders should be serving the future evolution of humanity and the development of free will, the ability to wield free will in benign ways for the sake of all human beings. That, to me, is good. What we have going here is not. And so I like to think of myself mythologically as a warrior on the front lines. And there are many of us now, and hopefully we're making more every day as we clarify these issues and this technology that we're not being told about.
Interesting. You've actually described it as guerrilla warfare.
Yes.
Oh, well, that is powerful stuff, and I agree with you, actually.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Because some people are still waiting on the sidelines for the experts to develop the courage to bet their career on, or maybe their family's lives, on telling the truth for once, and it's not going to happen. Those days of the expert and the patriarch and the one who knows and the Martin Luther Kings and the John Kennedys, those will not be allowed anymore. And so let's just roll up our sleeves and set our gaze on learning for ourselves and supporting each other, a truly democratic movement in a guerrilla warfare fashion. But it isn't really guerrilla warfare because they know where I am.
Right.
They know everything I say electronically. They can do anything with me they want.
Mm.
And we must be fully cognizant of that. You don't have to be a Martin Luther King to have your phone tapped or have a big fat file sitting on some FBI guy's desk. So I'm under no illusion, but it is where you're looking for your allies on your own. There is no set army. There is no set qualification. I have all kinds of people coming to my closed Facebook site who are interested in this issue for a variety of reasons, including targeted individuals who are constantly looking for people to believe their outlandish stories of being targeted, and they're far from being a Martin Luther King. So as far as there are so many experiments going on, simultaneously, there is a movement building among the people that simply for the sake of knowing at this point, I can't say that I'm not an activist in that sense. I'm not saying grab a sign, let's go to the streets. I don't think that'll work anymore. But I do believe that knowledge is power, and I know you do too, which is why yes. I admire your interviews and your interview style.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And of course, what's so remarkable about what you're saying and about your work in general is that you have this broad grasp of the deep political forces that got us here in the first place, heading into this dangerous future. And I think that's so crucial. For example, you mentioned John F. Kennedy there. And that era, if we study it, was really a battle between the deep state operating through structures like the clandestine side of the CIA and dark Wall Street interests, versus the public state, which was the political representation of the time that wanted to move the culture forward, you know, the space race and so on. But what happened was that the deep state won and the public side lost through the assassinations. And that's the situation that we're dealing with now. And I know you've written about this extensively, but it's such a great context to understand the challenges that we're facing here in the 21st century.
Oh, yes. And that is... You are right. It is crucial. I really believe in destiny. And when I was 15, maybe you've heard this on one of my many interviews that are on the net, but I was elected by a girls' state, which is a mock government at a state level, civically supported by civic groups. I was elected by about 800 girls to represent them in Washington, D.C. at Girls Nation. And so I was on a real different path then of, I thought, you know, I was headed toward the top 10 and a political career. And I mean, that was sort of in my mind as a young girl.
Right.
So when I got to Washington as a girl state rep, we had offices, and my office was Librarian of Congress, and we had an overseer. Lyndon Baines Johnson was with us all week. He was our guide. He every morning would say something which in the future, when I was older and wiser, I realized was pretty sleazy. He would say to me, I was from Missouri, and he would see my little ribbon, Missouri, and he'd say, "Well, what are you going to show me? You're from the show me state. What are you going to show me today, little gal?" You know, it was like, ooh.
Oh, real charming there.
But eventually, just about the last day I was there, we ended up in the Rose Garden with President Kennedy. And I know Bill Clinton was there because I've seen some of his photo ops that were taken of him there.
Oh, yeah.
Which leads me to believe he was being groomed already when he was a boy at Boys Nation.
Right.
Anyway, Kennedy was there. Jackie at that point was giving birth to Patrick. And as you know, Patrick didn't make it. Mm-hmm. John Kennedy was overwhelming. And so I went back to my home state and gave talks about my day with Kennedy. And then 3 months later, he was dead.
Wow.
And I was invited back by these civic groups to speak again to rooms filled with sobbing people. I mean, it was, you know, this was not a cynical era in the early 60s.
Sure.
So I think my political consciousness began at that moment, and I think I think it did for many, many of my generation. Mm-hmm. We'd been kind of cruising along in a little bubble of entitlement as an American youth, and we're all out trying not to be middle class and to be radical and whatever. And then it got real. It got really real. And a lot of us were politicized by that terrible act in Dallas, followed up by two more terrible acts. I mean, they basically killed all my generation's heroes.
Yeah.
Including Malcolm X for blacks,
right,
along with Martin Luther King. So it was a fomenting era. And I cut my teeth on that era. And when I became a researcher with my master's in historiography, I cut my teeth on John Kennedy's murder first, and really dug into that, as did many of us. And so I entered the deep politics that Peter Dale Scott talks about. I'm a big admirer of him.
And Professor Scott is a frequent visitor here on the show.
I know, of course he is. And so I was able to, I was writing a short story in 1993, summer, about a friend of mine, two friends of mine who had died mysteriously in the 60s, maybe through some terrible drug deal gone wrong or something. And suddenly a couple of characters appeared in my mind, and they were so real, I didn't know them. So I went to my local library. My librarians were already familiar with me, the reference librarians, and so I began to research who these might be, and thus was born a 20-year project of writing the Sub Rosa America series. Hmm. And that is a fictional history series of what I think has happened to America since John Kennedy's murder. And so I did it fictional because I needed room to really characterize the 60s generation in the way I knew it, and to inspire people to see it wasn't just political. It was also it was not sex, drugs, and rock and roll only. It was political, and it was also deeply communal, I suppose you'd say. We were very communal people. We shared ideas. We loved to lock horns and read and go out and have long walks and share. It wasn't all sex, drugs, and rock and roll at all.
Yeah.
So anyway, I wrote that series, and while I was doing that, that's when I made all these files, and I'm sitting right by them. They're right over here staring at me. So this was my great joy, and I simply could not write fast enough, Daniel. It was remarkable.
Nice.
The story just told itself, and the only reason it took so long was I was living a life while I was trying to write all these books, and I had no idea they would be five books worth, no idea whatsoever.
So, now, what is the significance of Sub Rosa?
Sub Rosa is a term from the Middle Ages. And it, under the rose, and you would sometimes see it during the Rosicrucian era, when the Christian movement, the true Christianity, went underground. You might see a rose here and there. And I find it interesting because I believe I'm right in saying that George H.W. Bush is a member of many brotherhoods, but one of them is, I believe, the Black Rose. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's disinformation. There's also a White Rose, and there's a Scarlet Rose. And so that symbol has been co-opted mercilessly.
Yes.
As has the term Rosicrucian, as has the term Knight Templar, etc. But all the same, Sub Rosa, it means hidden. Basically means hidden, yeah. Sub Rosa America.
Fascinating. That's very interesting. Now, you, from there, you got into these MKUltra mind control investigations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that affect you, and what did you find out?
I just can't say enough about MKUltra because it was part of Operation Paperclip, and that's the other biggie. If there are two big secrets, those are the two that in the 90s you simply could not find anything about them except on the web.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are books galore on both of those topics. But MKUltra was started in 1953 as a mind control experimental program It was signed off by the head of the CIA then, the new CIA, Alan Dulles, and various psychiatrists worked for it. We had Nazis, we had ensconced Nazis. They'd come over with their records from what they'd done in the camps to not just Jews, but Germans, gypsies, gays, disabled. And they came over with all those wonderful Pavlovian experiments, some of them entailing surgery, certainly electrodes, drugs, hypnosis, and they just were scooped right up into the CIA. And this was really, I would say this is the point at which America was really lost.
Yeah.
Was the alliance with the Nazis. Because anyone who has two brain cells can figure out that Nazism is not just the National Socialist Party. Nazism is a religion. It's a satanic religion. And by merging that with naive, boastful, arrogant American intelligence agents and scientists, a great disservice was done to this country. And I subsequent to collecting all this data on MKUltra, I got to know a lot of people. I got to know a lot of victims who finally remembered enough to begin to deprogram themselves or enter long-term therapy to find out what had happened to them that made their lives so chaotic. I have nothing but admiration for these people because there is, for many years, there was nowhere to go. No one knew about this. It was too horrendous to imagine. And, of course, this is always what those who serve evil count on, is that it's going to be so outrageously horrible that you just can't believe any human being could do it to another. Of course, there's been mind control over the centuries. There's always been some nefarious individual who wants a sex slave or you know, wants to be powerful in front of others. But this was a completely logical, detached, electronic program. In fact, there were 149 sub-programs under MKUltra. And when the Church Committee finally came about in 1975, the story was that MKUltra had been disposed of and gotten rid of, and oh well, ha ha ha, in 1973, and that all the records had been burned. Well, fortunately, there were some boxes of records that had not been burned, though many had.
Right.
And the Church Committee, unfortunately, also served as a vessel for whitewashing. I don't think it was Frank Church of Idaho's intent that it be used so, but that's how it was used. So it disappeared for another 20 years. And the next time you hear anything about it is in 1995 when President Clinton called for the Human Radiation Experiments Committee, and they went over how children had been injected with radiation, gee, just to see what happens. And then along also came many victims from the MKUltra programs that were still going on.
Right. So very credible whistleblowers, like Kathy O'Brien, for example, who was an MKUltra mind control sex slave for government officials. She came forward and revealed some incredible details.
Yes.
So she's one of these victims you're talking about.
Yes, she is. She is. And there are legions of them. And many still don't even know what happened to themselves because they do not have the courage, or they are so disabled physically and mentally that they don't have the juice that it takes to go back into those terrifying memories of things done to you by men with PhDs and medical degrees and not just men, women as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that would be a show in itself, Daniel.
Definitely. Well, it's fascinating because it's apparent to me that one of the reasons you can connect the dots so well is because of this background. You know, you've seen the mind control side, and now they're using this technological control.
We are literally being plugged in to this ionized atmosphere in this now wireless world. And we have not just taken in the heavy metals, the polymers, and the biologicals, but we have also taken in nanosensors that can be remotely contacted and read.
Now, can you describe how we're taking them in? Because this is a kind of EMK Ultra. It's an electronic version of the original.
It is, but it's being delivered in the environment by the chemtrails and the GMO foods.
I see.
Would be my guess. I can't prove that, but that would be my guess, because certainly Monsanto has given me much food for thought to see its various alliances, along with Walmart, along with Raytheon, 3D. I mean, there are so many corporate sponsors of this program, laying out millions of dollars to make sure that the environment now is the delivery system. And that's besides the sensors, I need to put in there also the nano microprocessors. These are tiny, tiny computers that also can be remotely contacted, and they are swimming in our bloodstream right now. I have never seen one under a microscope, but when I was living in New Mexico, Clifford did put my blood under the microscope along with my saliva, and I was able to see the cross-domain bacteria, the Morgellons creature, munching my erythrocytes. So they are in all of us, though some people have the lesions. I just want to be clear on that. We're all in the same sad club, but for some reason, some people whose immune systems may be more challenged, perhaps, than mine, are erupting in lesions. And out of those lesions come these fibers, these filaments, that have red, blue, and black heads on them. And those are just wires. They're not just wires either. They're organic and inorganic, very carefully genetically engineered. And each color, they're color-coded because each one has a different function. And one of the things to remember when I'm telling you that the wireless world is not our friend is that when a person with the Morgellons lesions comes near, say, a toaster oven or their cell phone.
Right.
And those little wiry guys sticking their heads out of that wound, they go nuts. They go nuts. They're all over the place. Ooh. They just think that's a birthday party to be near electromagnetic energy. So we really need to think of our lifestyles. I don't own a cell phone. But, you know, I always tell people I'm not that important, that you need to know where I am 24/7. We need to power down at night, maybe turn off the router, unplug everything you possibly can, because already the 60 hertz, you can't take all that apart, all the wiring in your house.
Right. So
to ameliorate your environment to the furthest degree that you can, especially around children who are more soft tissue, old people, more soft tissue. So this is something that we all need to learn about, because a lot of Americans haven't had science since high school.
Exactly.
And they've left it to the experts. Probably not a good idea. So now we have an option. We have an opportunity to really take responsibility for our health. Not going to the great white doctor in the medical industry, or taking big pharma drugs or going to get the flu vaccine. All of these things now have been weaponized, Daniel. I have to take the military at their word. They are weaponizing everything, full spectrum dominance. And the full spectrum dominance has a two-tier meaning. full spectrum dominance of psychology, anthropology, universities, everything in the community, so that even communities are now doing sustainable development. And the other level is the electromagnetic spectrum, to have full spectrum dominance over that.
Right.
And that these are things that the human has not evolved to handle. And they have in mind that they're going to force us over the generations to evolve to handle an electromagnetic environment. And in the meantime, the other generations, I'd say about three generations that are alive right now, we're not going to fare so well. And how is planet Earth going to fare? Well, this planet is not made for that. Anyone who understands the biosphere to any small degree knows that. But of course, to the capitalist West, you're just looking at resources.
Yeah.
You're not looking at a living planet. You're looking at ways to make money. And this is sadder than sad, because I love this planet. I'm sure you do too.
Mm-hmm.
We are merged with this planet. In fact, I would go so far as to say that our own evolution is married to the evolution of this planet. Not that this planet will last forever, just as we don't last forever. But it certainly is here now, and we know how to make it healthy. We know how to leave it to its own tremendous resources instead of doctoring it with our agendas and, assuming that it'll be there tomorrow. These assumptions are just not necessarily true anymore.
Yes, and I think you're bringing us into the core questions now. So when we come back, we're going to go a level deeper and find out what the goal of this worldwide control plan is. Are they merging us into technology? Will we become machines? Will we have a choice? We'll be back with Elena Freeland. Stay with us.
Dark journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
Internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special winter discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with author Elena Freeland. She's written a 5-part historical novel series on the downfall of the U.S. called Sub Rosa America. And her most recent book is the powerful and definitive work on chemtrails and the programs to ionize our atmosphere. It's called Chemtrails, HARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, a very unnerving piece of work. And it's soon to be followed up with a new book on what she calls the space fence. Now, Elena, we were about to touch on the goals of this worldwide smart grid and the setting up of this artificial intelligence apparatus to run these operations. Now, what do you believe their ultimate goal is behind this kind of technological Frankenstein that's being created?
Yes, and that has to do with the space fence. And the smart grid is the first step, of course. Let's go back to what I said about in 1987 when they put the SDI to bed and with it the space fence. At that time, the claim was that they only had the space fence above. And they just couldn't get that lockdown between above and below. It's very ironic because one of the old esoteric adages that has, I guess, very pregnant meaning for people much wiser and smarter than I is as above, so below.
Right.
And so I think that's what they have in mind. They want an as above, so below, meaning we are as gods. We have total control of our planet. And so, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that the artificial intelligence then, in their minds, gives them the ability to achieve this transhumanist vision of becoming gods. So, in a sense, they want to merge with the AI. Is that the logical conclusion for where this is going?
Well, I think they think they're going to be able to control the AI.
Uh-huh.
And I just read a book. I'm sorry I can't give you the name of it. I didn't finish it. But I got the idea from the guy. It was very good. He is not a proponent of AI and says that we may be heading for a tremendous catastrophe because if you program into an AI a self-evolution, then eventually the AI is probably going to have the original thought of, well, these humans, I don't really need them.
Yeah.
So I think that the men who would be as gods are thinking they will also control the... I think they're thinking they'll control everything. But when they resurrected the SDI, a la HARP, and by the way, it is true that HARP is no longer what it was.
Right.
Forgot to put that in there.
Okay.
People are still blaming that wonderful acronym HARP for everything that has to do with radio frequency or microwaves, and it's not quite that way anymore. HARP has been retooled. It was the most powerful ionospheric heater in the world for approximately a decade. Much was learned about plasma, the fourth state of matter, and bringing it down and making it work here for a variety of reasons, and I'd like to name those at a certain point. But now it's been turned over to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and it is simply part of the grid of ionospheric heaters. Let's see if I can name them. Ionospheric heaters, radomes like the SBX offshore and the NEXRADs on land, radio observatories, radar installations on military bases. There are over 1,700 military bases in the world.
Right.
What else? Power plants. Some power plants are being used to make additional moisture when weather systems are being moved across land. So it's HARP has now become part of this matrix of an an energy moving grid.
Okay.
Which is part of the smart grid. It does need the cell phone towers. It needs the Gwen towers, etc. So HARP is now just part of that. And I want to make that clear so that when people use the term HARP, I would appreciate it so I don't have to keep correcting people to use the term HARP technology. That would work.
Yes, the actual antenna array is one thing and the technology is another.
Exactly. And it is no longer the HARP it used to be. It is something else. And I think one of the reasons that acronym was pushed so much and allowed to become so popular is to give people the idea that there was just one instrument doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Bad harp.
Right, right. So the Space Fence was born more out of the Star Wars SDI program. And that was developed in the 80s by Reagan and Bush, which was developed really under the pretext of zapping missiles from space that were incoming.
Right, a shield.
Yes.
As a shield. This too, this Space Fence will be much more powerful because now the lower atmosphere has been ionized. And they will have to continue pumping the ionization of this atmosphere. They do it partially with weather systems as well. Weather is an energy source. Uh-huh. And if they can command the weather, they can command that energy source for their communications, for all of their agendas that are military, industrial, intelligence, complex in nature. So the weather plays a very key role here. For the Space Fence, so you've got, let's just consider you have satellites up there, you've got the ISS, and down here, you've got a unity now between the upper atmosphere and the lower atmosphere as those ionospheric heaters keep pumping, keep that going. And they've got their, you know, a bit of a radar here and a laser there and, you know, high-powered microwave there, radio waves. You see what I mean, pump, 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 pump. And that then between the upper and lower atmosphere, this is the terrain of the Space Fence now. This is the terrain. But now we have to add another piece that I haven't mentioned.
All right.
It's very important. And Billy Hayes, the harp man, is the man who told me about this. Every time a rocket fires off at Edwards Air Force Base or back east, every time in that fuel, there will be a mass of aluminum oxide left behind. As that rocket goes up, you know, you never see them go straight up. They sort of veer. And now they're going almost parallel with the atmosphere. They're going up to the upper atmosphere to lay more of the same that they have laid down here over and over and over in the same orbit. So Billy has said that if you were able to view the Earth from space, you would see something forming almost along the lines of the Saturn rings.
Hmm.
And so when you have this huge ring around the Earth that, again, can be quickened, can be zapped, and brought to become a shield, can be a shield, you have to ask yourself, shielded from what? And then we arrive at this strange door of the UFOs.
Yes.
We arrive at the same place that you and Catherine did when you were looking at the economy.
Right.
And in a way, this is just another way of looking at it. So, you know, if you read on Space Fence, you won't find much at all in open press yet. You'll hear about how they're trying to figure out a way to handle the garbage in space. You'll hear about the rocket launches, launching lithium. You know, there'll be lithium trail. We're back in the same place we were in the 90s when we were putting together the story of the chemtrails and HAARP. You're just taking a little piece here and a little piece there. Mm-hmm. Certainly, this will mean, because they've got the ring up there, so you've got tremendous conductivity there. You've got conductivity down here. So in between, you have total surveillance. Total, I would say. And I'm not talking just about reading a postage stamp or the number on your license plate or your tapping into your cell phone. I'm talking about right down to the DNA level. Imagine that you have now put microprocessors and sensors along with everything else into every human body, every animal body, all the soil, all the bark on the trees, the leaves on the trees, the oceans. You have laid your nest full of information that you can tap.
I see.
You have total surveillance. And that is what I think the space fence means for our side of the story, for the earthbound, the earth livers. As far as for the UFOs, when I say UFOs, I think, you know, we have to define our terms.
Sure.
Because there are many unidentified flying objects, especially now. Some of them are plasma orbs being created out of sheer plasma. Not difficult to do at all. So they're not necessarily from Alpha Centauri or anywhere else. As I say to people who try to get me to talk about UFOs, I say I'm a real fan of Occam's razor. And, I keep it as simple as I can, but I am very aware that we have anti-gravity. We have crafts, vectored crafts. We've had them, you know. I don't know if you read Nick Cook's book, The Hunt for Ground Zero. Great book.
Wonderful book.
I discovered it by accident, you know, accident.
Right.
And he wrote it in 2001. I had no idea it existed. And I enjoyed it immensely because there he is. He's a reporter for a pretty conservative Jane's Defense Weekly, you know, probably one of the best magazines in the world on military, on defense. And he's sneaking around trying to see if there's really any such thing as anti-gravity technology. And as he goes through the book, he tells it in marvelous fashion. He eventually ends up where I did, with Operation Paperclip. He ends up with the Nazis and how we brought them over and how they were just on the brink of building one of those anti-gravity ships that would really work. Of course, Tesla built one too.
That's right.
So we've had those. We've had them for 50 years. And I'm like Nick at the end of his book. He says, so I know it exists. I come away with only one question. Why has it been kept secret for over 50 years?
Exactly.
Yeah. So we know something's going on there from our side. Well, then there's another side, and that's a hyperdimensional parallel universe, quantum physics question.
Yeah.
I have read some amazing works on these entities, these beings that have their own dimensions. And now, ever since we developed radar for World War II, we have had more and more visitations.
Mm-hmm.
We've also had a military that has, in my opinion, back-engineered those visitations and abductions, et cetera. So there's a history there, but it's still very secret.
Yes.
And as you know, Catherine went through it. You start mentioning UFOs, and suddenly, you know, about half of your phone list goes away.
And yet, when you look at something like SDI, Star Wars, and, you know, we can more easily see it being done in the context of dealing with something out there rather than something here.
Yes.
That's the intriguing thing about it. So it makes even more sense. I think at this point, there's enough credible testimony and anecdotes from insiders that certainly in the minds of those who were dealing with it, like President Reagan, there was tremendous concern about this off-world threat. And just recently, Gorbachev came out and said that during one of their summits, Reagan pulled him aside and said, "Would you be our ally against an alien threat?" So that's on record now. So we have to wonder why he would be thinking seriously about it. Of course, he had access to the information. So no doubt there's a great mystery and some missing history here regarding SDI. And it gets us into this mess that we're in now because so much of the technology we're discussing here today came out of all that research.
It does. It does. And when you mention Reagan, I mean, just as a sidebar, don't forget his assassination attempt in 1981. And he was very clear that he wanted to go to one hospital and not another.
Huh.
And I think he knew that they were going to tamper with his brain. I mean, this may sound outrageous to your listeners, but I'm telling you, MKUltra has permeated every aspect of American life.
Right.
Every aspect. So I feel for Reagan. I don't know quite who was who there, but I know that George H.W. Bush and Dick Cheney, as Secretary of Defense, ran his entire administration.
Yes. Well, we know Bush Sr. was pushed onto the Reagan ticket at the last minute. So Reagan's assassination attempt happened only 2 months into his presidency. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Also, it would have been convenient to eliminate him there and install Bush instead. And we would have had Desert Storm in Iraq in 1981 instead of 1991.
It might have been the plan to truly eliminate him. I don't know. I don't know about that. There are some things about, you know, when you read the different accounts. I mean, each one of these little vignettes of the shadow government it requires looking at it from as many angles as you possibly can before making a decision.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people... they don't want to spend the time on that, and I can understand that. I have spent thousands and thousands of hours on these things because I'm a real truth hound. I really want to know what country I'm living in. I don't want to be fed some line, and I want to know where the evil has been successful and where it was less than successful and how it put a spin on that so that it could be successful. I mean, I follow all these things to the degree that I have hours in the day. But I am concentrating on this particular one, the space fence, the SDI, the culmination. I call it the apotheosis of the SDI program. And I think this is it. This is what they want. Will it work?
So this is the major crossroads between their plans and humanity's future. How should we view this new technologically altered terrain, then, of our reality?
Billy Hayes and I were on an interview yesterday, and Billy described it so well. And I want to try to see if I can do that. That this is really now, we're living in sort of a woven fabric of electromagnetism. And it's not just like the old days of the power lines and, you know, the long waves traveling through us sort of thing. This is, because the atmosphere is ionized, this is like really, really, I think some electromagnetic sensitive people feel it. They feel like, you know, there's something scratching at them. And the Morgellons people feel it. They feel that scratching from inside their skin because they're, especially when they're around electromagnetism or wireless devices. So we're living in a fabric now, and it's penetrating us into our bodies because of what we've inhaled and ingested. And that's the new part. Now, we always have had parasitic beings in us here and there, and our intestinal tract operates the best in a certain atmosphere of flora and fauna. But this idea that it's electromagnetically stimulated from the outside, now this is a whole new thing, and makes us even more vulnerable. Billy was saying that the phones, when we had 2G phones, 2 gig, people began to change. By 3 gig, they were completely addicted to the cell phone. 4 gig, even more so, and less human with each other, more reactive. I liked how Catherine was talking about, what term did she use? Entrainment.
Right.
That we're being entrained. And you can see, Daniel, can't you, how living in an ionized atmosphere with all of the microprocessors and sensors inside of us will be entrainment times 10. Yes?
Yes.
So if you're also then addicted to your cell phone, you're carrying it around. Many kids are still carrying it on their bodies. Bad idea. Very bad idea. Some holding it up. Some are texting, which is nice.
Uh-huh.
And they're not keeping it on their body. But we're all wired in now, all wired in through our cell phones, and we're losing that human capability of relating and feeling that empathy, feeling that other human being. We're now going through electronic devices. And, you know, the ghost is in the machine. Whatever it is, it's communicating with the other ghosts inside of us that are machines. So this is our condition. And if we can only learn to contemplate it, not out of fear. I have no fear. I mean, I think we all know we're going to die someday anyway, right?
Sure.
So that's a given. What I try to do is just minimize my the electronics I really don't need. I mean, you know, I'm in front of the computer a lot because I'm a writer. I'm writing. I got a stack of notes next to me I have to go through. So I'm here enough.
Right.
I've got my computer raised. I don't have any shields at this point. I've been thinking about buying another one that I had 1 year ago. But I have a phone. I'm not on the phone a lot. I don't own a cell phone. So minimize to the degree you can while following your dream. We have to follow our dream while we're here.
Uh-huh.
We're not here to be perfect until the moment we die. We have to use these bodies. I'm taking Lugol's 5% iodine right now. I have maybe a couple of drops every few days. You don't need much because the Fukushima plume is passing over me, is what I'm told.
Well, yeah, and that's a wake-up call, too, because there on the West Coast, you're on the front line.
We're the front line.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Yes, and that is very unnerving somehow. Of course, there are also a lot of weather problems on the West Coast now with the California drought, and that also is kind of suspicious.
Oh, well, let me explain it to you. It's more than suspicious.
Okay,
it's
yes.
It's intentional. Because if you think about it, California and then the other place that has been in a four-year drought is our breadbasket, the Midwest.
Right.
It's attacking our food source. And when they bring the weather in off of the South Pacific, that's where the moisture is pretty much made. It's just like a little wash tub down there. It's called the Pineapple Express. So the Navy is down there, and they're taking that moisture system, and they're going to run it up the West Coast, not allowing it into California, and catch that jet stream, which is over, there's a hump over Vancouver Island north of me, and catch it, and it'll get scooped up into that jet stream and taken east, south and east. And now they can do all their voodoo on tornadoes. They can have floods. Mm-hmm. They can make it rain masses and make a flood in Arizona, which I think they did 2 years ago. So what we've seen is, it's interesting that the jet stream they've forced it to come further south, which, I'm sure that's experimental. They're seeing the aurora borealis in Texas and Oklahoma. But mainly that weather is brought off the coast, off of the South Pacific, up to the coast. Chemtrails are laid north-south as soon as that weather system is brought forward and has already had some zapping going on out in the South Pacific in order to herd it toward this one point where now the chemtrails are laid. Now in come the interferometric, which means just two rays crossing over and force, with laser, perhaps radio frequency, whatever, and getting it to line up in a wall. And it's a wall of, now it's moisture and plasma. It's moisture and particulates that are now have been zapped. And in there now, a laser will create a wall, a tunnel straight through that wall that will sort of suck the entire system north up to the jet stream. And then it gets on the jet stream like a roller coaster and begins its ride across the United States for other weather things to happen, thanks to the presence of wind farms. Wind farms are pulsing at the same pulse as the Gwen Towers, as the NEXRAD Towers. All of this in concert, all of this AI. This is all AI. And various experiments will begin wherever along there, and then they can bring it all the way to the Atlantic coast when, thanks to other instruments in the Atlantic, we may have an Atlantic system coming to meet it, and then we can have hurricanes, we can have storms galore, whatever is chosen. You know, you can have 60-degree weather and have an ice storm.
Yeah, yeah, it's bizarre. And there is a financial aspect to this, which is these weather derivatives, which you've written about. And can you explain what they are here?
Yeah, that all started with Enron in 1990. I think Enron was the first corporation that, because of course it was an insider and it knew about Bernard Eastland's patent. It knew what the plans were. Uh-huh. So they had a weather desk, and they developed a weather derivative system by which you could bet on the weather. And even if you were wrong about the weather, if you were an insider anyway, you could profit from the disaster. And that's kind of a no-lose deal. And that's really what I see happening. And I talk about that extensively in the book.
Yes.
Particularly regarding Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Sandy, the terrible hurricane in Christchurch, New Zealand. I followed that one as well. You get people to, their homes are destroyed. They're usually poor. Make sure that, you know, you're lining your weather system up with the poor area and not the rich area. You get all those poor out of there. You buy up their property for a song, bring in Halliburton to rebuild. And what I noticed for us, and Christchurch is similar, actually, now that I think of it, but for us, Katrina and Sandy were both international ports. And I think that's important. I think they wanted to, they just said, let's see now, we need an experiment of a hurricane. So how about let's go on the coast. Yeah, go on the coast, do the Gulf Coast. You know, that port needs to be redone anyway. So let's just get in there. It's kind of like 911, Daniel.
Yeah.
Those two buildings were old and needed to come down anyway, didn't they?
That's right.
And the guy who bought them only weeks before the event, 9/11, he made sure that he had plenty of insurance and he had plans for a new building. And okay.
Such good timing.
Same real estate deal going on with Katrina and Sandy. Sandy was also an international port. It was the port of New Jersey and the port of New York. And the poor were forced out. And now it's being restructured. I think that we're going to see this. This is sort of an earthbound terraforming. It's one of the seven operations that I name in the book that Clifford Carnicom first came up with in his wonderful, still wonderful, 2005 little film. I think it's called Aerosol Crimes or Cloud Cover. Either one is the same film.
Okay.
And in it, he names the seven agendas that this chemtrails ionospheric heater technology serves. I see it working all the time. Now, it can also be used for money, but it can also be used simply to destroy or starve people. So you have the starvation of California dries a bone, the trees are dying, agriculture is suffering, or Iran. Iran's not behaving the way we want, so let's give them a drought. It's a funny thing. Every other country knows what we're doing.
Right.
Do those things abroad. All but Americans. Americans know nothing of how it's being used as a weapon. And that's really unfortunate.
That's true. It's fascinating, too, because Iran did recently come out and say, hey, they're doing this to us.
Yes. But, of course, it's Iran, so nobody believed it.
Right,
if this the media, the Mockingbird media in this country, thought that they might have believed it, you never would have seen it in this country.
Definitely not.
Could not have seen that piece of news. It's so carefully chosen. We're like in a news blackout here. I mean, but I'm preaching to the choir. You know that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, interestingly enough, William Cohen, who was the defense secretary under Clinton, he was actually a Republican from Maine, but he let it slip in congressional testimony that weather modification and weather warfare existed, that it was a modern reality. Later, he tried to walk that back somewhat, but it was already out there, so it was too late. But you do mention in the book that there was an act, the National Weather Modification Act, and they put it in under the Secretary of Commerce when Carter was president. And then when Reagan got in, they moved it around again. But that's fascinating.
I thought that was interesting. I think I commented in the book on it that, Secretary, Department of Commerce, well, that makes sense because they're going to use it as a moneymaker.
Yes.
When we're not doing commodities anymore. We're not allowing farms anymore. Well, okay. So let's see. And I think Catherine talked about that too, to commoditize the weather disasters. I think she said, I actually marked that. I wanted to say that to you. She
yes,
said,
please go ahead.
Either we're going to, either you invest in and build the future or you go to war. She said that. And those were the two choices for a long time. But I think there's a third option now, and that is to make money off of disaster.
Right.
I really do. I think that many are invested in this. I see these ionizing weather corporations are popping up like mushrooms. It's a way to make money in the sense that, okay, so let's create a drought in Michigan. So now the aqueous weather company can come in and create rain for these guys, be a rainmaker, do a rain dance with an ionizing process and make money off of it. So I think that this is how the fat cats are going to continue to do business under disaster capitalism. And I always like Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine book for cluing us into the fact that disaster capitalism has to be next.
Right.
And we're in it. We're in it now.
Yeah. Well, of course, right off the bat, I think of the disaster in Haiti.
Oh,
and the fact that the Clintons and the Bushes were very involved in the opportunities for rebuilding there. But can you think of a recent example of this disaster capitalism?
Well, and in Christchurch, it was particularly blatant because an entire group of American politicians and Australian politicians were in Christchurch for a meeting, and then they flew out, and 2 hours later, the catastrophe happened.
Wow.
I think that we're going to see this period in which there's not going to be a whole lot of cover story for things. I mean, in the press, yes.
Oh, yeah.
The masses.
Yeah.
But I think, I believe FEMA had arrived days before 9/11. It was waiting in the wings.
Uh-huh.
We always have these military drills.
Yeah, there you go.
I just laugh at that. I can't take it seriously. Always got the military drills happening.
Right.
What I consider to be experiments. Now the one in 9/11 was not an experiment. That
right.
was a ritual, I would call it. I would go so far as to call it a black magic ritual.
Oh, well, that sounds appropriate.
I see that as being, you know, the our Hiroshima, our terrible moment.
Yes.
When the government was utterly lost, utterly, in the wake of fear and of entrainment through watching the towers come down again and again and again on television, just as we watched Jackie crawl over the trunk
exactly.
of the limo again and again and again. Entrainment, as Catherine said, is everywhere. And that's why it's dangerous to watch television I myself have never owned one because I know they are a mind control medium. I read Jerry Mander's book, Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. I read it just as it came out in 1977. And I said, this is it.
Yeah.
He's got it.
Yeah.
That is it for me.
Wow. Well, you're ahead of your time then, too. You know, I want to say here that your work is so fascinating, and you're getting into so many crucial areas. And I know your upcoming book on the space fence will be even more intriguing.
That's the amazing thing, that you can write books on cutting-edge technology if you're willing to do the labor of reading, and comparing, and, you know, listening to various people's insights. It's exciting. It's exciting. I can't go to the library and find 10 books I could read that will give me the background to write this. They're not there. And, you know, I've had to defend the Chemtrails Heart book because it has over 600 footnotes. And, well, it's just not one long footnote. Well, I just wanted to slay forever the dragon of the conspiracy theory. And in this book, I won't have to do that.
Yes, definitely. Well, you'll start with a totally different palette because you've already kind of defined it. This book is great. I think really in the realm of this research, it's the best book because it brings all of the pieces together. And really the information was so scattered before that vital parts were laying over here, they were laying over there. And so in this book, you've really got the crucial parts assembled, and that makes it exceptional, I think. So really, it's a must read. My last question for you is, how do you feel in terms of the timeline now? How far along are they in these plans? You know, what stage would you say we're in? Would you say we're in the opening stage? Are we midway? You know, are they close to finalizing these plans? What's going on here?
I guess I have to say I see us completely in it now. Yes, it's true that the brown shirts are not at the door dragging us off to the genetic labs. That's true. But we really don't know what all of the entrainment and the microprocessors we've swallowed, the microsensors, the chemicals operating in our bloodstream and therefore our cells and our genetics, and the radio frequency that has yet to be, the non-ionized radiation has yet to be admitted to be deleterious to the human health, mental and physical, the spinning out of control criminal government, the governance that we're experiencing, the no confidence, people overreacting to next to nothing. We're really in a vortex now. And as any vortex, how do you define where we're at in it? I personally do not feel I have any controls that I could, if I joined the right group, or if I wrote the right book, or if I talked to the right person. I don't feel there are any right now. We're on for the ride now. But meanwhile, we still have the freedom to educate ourselves and prepare ourselves and the youths around us. We can do that. To avoid this is a sure spiritual death.
Right.
And to me, this is a spiritual war. This has to do with humanity's future, and I want it to have a future. And so I'm fighting for everything I'm worth, as are many people, many people. I just got back from L.A. where Michael Murphy filmed me for his next film. He's coming out with a third one, An Unconventional Shade of Gray. All sorts of people are doing amazing things, and I'm thrilled to be involved with people that are fighting on the right side. Like yeah, you, definitely. Daniel, you're fighting on the right side. I feel that. Even though you keep an equanimity, and I appreciate that, I know I can recognize a brother when I see one.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's extraordinary work that you're doing. The more people discover it, the more prepared they can be to understand and engage this new reality we're in now. So what's the best way for someone to get the book?
Either through Feral House, F-E-R-A-L, that's Adam Parfrey's publishing outfit, or Amazon.
Amazon, yes. Yeah. And the name of the book, again, is Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. Really remarkable and eye-opening information. You know, we can read this now and get ready for your new book coming out this year, later on the Space Fence. It's just great having you on, and let's keep in touch on your new work.
Oh, let's stay in touch, and I feel very honored and privileged to be interviewed by such a really good interviewer.
Thank you. What a pleasure having you on, and I'm learning a lot from you. I know many people are, so have a great day over there.
Thanks, Daniel. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with author Elena Freeland on chemtrails, HARP, the space fence, and weather warfare. You can find more special reports, interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel for the latest videos. See you soon.